You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
As the intro said, welcome. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. This show was born out of a desire to help guide parents and adolescent service industry professionals alike to professional resources as they face critical moments with their children and or clients. This show will address such issues as locating runaway teens, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, and dealing with addictions. And in that area, our guest today is Nanette Zumwalt. Nanette, glad to have you.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here this morning, Alan.
Well, and it's good that we get the opportunity to get together. You know, we seem to need to fly 2,000 miles away or set something up, even though we live close by. So if this is what it takes to get together, fine. We'll do it.
We'll take the opportunity.
Absolutely. I want to tell everybody a little bit about you and your company. Nanette is the president and CEO of Hired Power. And Hired Power, I'll let you tell us a little bit about that. But I'll tell them, you've worked with more than 250 programs and 400 clients nationally and internationally, specializing in providing custom, confidential support to those who lead high-profile lives. Now, tell us a little bit more about Hired Power.
Thank you. We've been really blessed to work with treatment centers and families both across the country and internationally. We've worked with families in other countries. The majority of our families, of course, are in the United States. Hired Power was founded in 2002. And a lot of you may be thinking, wow, she's called her company Hired Power. But I want to share with you, only my husband can call me God. The rest of you, it is Hired Power, kind of a play on words, hiring someone to be there to support, guide, and mentor you through the recovery process.
Well, now I know that it was created out of an individual personal experience. Can you share that with everybody?
Absolutely. The founder of Hired Power, her name is Deborah, and I share the story. You can find it on our website. We talk about it openly. Deborah had a horrible addiction, cocaine addiction problem. She was a very successful entrepreneur, smart, articulate businesswoman who could not manage her disease. She had multiple treatment experiences, and finally, at the end of her last treatment experience, she hired someone to go home with her. She was great in treatment. She was a good client. She followed directions. She listened. She learned. But each time she left, she couldn't take the information home into her daily living. And that's really what we find, Alan. We are a big proponent for treatment, all different levels of treatment. There's many different levels, but we find that people can do well within mm-hmm. those boundaries and that structure. But it's not treatment that fails. It's the application of the information, actually taking it home, applying it into an active daily living plan. And with someone in her home, living with her on a 24/7 basis, she was able to apply all those new skills, thoughts, and ideas until they became manageable and they became part of her daily living plan. And that is how she finally got clean and sober successfully. And she approached me and said, you know, I can't be the only person who can't do
right.
this. I can manage my life very well. I'm smart, I'm successful, and yet here I struggle. So we got together and created Hired Power to really professionalize this service. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you could imagine being so desperate as to just hire someone to come live in your home, in the bedroom next to you and your husband, in your home, in everything you have sacred and, you know,
right.
special to you, and having that person there without knowing who they were or any real clinical oversight. So Hired Power began out of her
right.
heart and her mission, and has grown to be very successful and reached families across the country.
Right. I mean, I think it's a huge component. You have people spending, I mean, thousands and thousands of dollars, you know, to go into treatment, to get the help that they need, and then to go back into an environment that very possibly reminds them of everything that they were before.
Absolutely. The families that I talk to, it's not just the client themselves are so fear-based at the end of treatment when they're working on that next step plan, but it's the family saying, you know, we're so afraid. We don't know what to do. And really, as an industry, that's been a huge gap. Mm-hmm. You know, they kind of, I equate it, and you can laugh, but it really makes sense to me. I equate it to the Wizard of Oz. You know, they do all of this work as a family, as a client. They walk to the edge, and they hand them this one-dimensional piece of paper and say, follow the yellow brick road, bye-bye, follow the yellow brick road. And there's witches and flying monkeys and poppy seeds on that yellow brick road. So having someone there with you, walking you, guiding you, mentoring you through that process is invaluable.
Well, actually, I like that comparison, but as you were saying it, I was thinking, wow, you've worked with some of the same families I have.
Yes, and graciously so. Yeah,
it's one of the things I've been very concerned with. I mean, as many people, if they've listened, know, is the concept of aftercare, how huge it is. And working primarily for me with adolescents, it's the same thing. You know, if they go to a program, they spend the time there, they have worked with some wonderful people to bring them to a place that they're comfortable with, and then those wonderful people aren't there anymore.
Right.
And now they're back in this old environment. You know, again, it's I think it's phenomenal what you're doing, and as I said, and you're doing it with adults, but they're still in situations to where they can backslide and not really have any support there.
Absolutely. I think old habits, old thinking patterns, doesn't matter if you're 14 or, you know, 47.
Right.
You're still going to get comfortable and slide back into those patterns if you're not conscious and actively doing something on a daily basis to restructure that.
How long, and I realize this is probably a tough question because it's hard to say, but I get asked questions like this, so to kind of come up with an average, about how long does somebody who's coming out of treatment generally need somebody to stay with them before maybe they start getting weaned off?
Well, again, we Hired Power, and we'll talk a little bit more about this, I'm sure, has a variety of different services. We've really grown out of a desire to fill those gaps. You know, originally Hired Power was created around the personal recovery assistance service, which means someone coming into your home, either on a 12 or 24 hour basis, being with you that whole time. Our average length of stay has been about 30 days. And
that's actually shorter than I thought.
Well, and I say average because sometimes we're going home with them for the first 72 hours, you know, to really help them get to that first meeting, clean out the house of all the paraphernalia that were left behind on the way to treatment. And maybe they have a next step place. They're going to an outpatient program or they're doing something else. So we're really, again, filling that gap. But we've been with clients as long as 15 months on a 24-hour, you know, seven-day-a-week basis. So it really is an average. When we talk about our long-term monitoring program, we'll really talk more about what is the length of stay needed? What are the studies saying? What are the outcomes saying that families as well as individuals need to stay connected to a level of daily recovery support, not just working their own active plan, but outside support? And, you know, what does that real length of stay look like? And in that, to answer your question in short, I would say a minimum of 12 months. But the outcomes show, you know, up to 5 years.
Okay. Why don't you, I mean, walk us through, because as you said, there's a variety of different services that have now grown out of this, all of which were gaps, really.
Correct.
Smaller gaps, bigger gaps. I know that there's a Safe Passage service. So tell us a little bit about that, and then maybe walk us through how the different ones have connected now.
Sure. Safe Passage was created in treatment centers would call us and say that a client had called multiple times. Now, again, we started as an adult service, so you can't send someone to go get someone who is unwilling.
Right.
You know, it's against the law.
Right.
I don't look good in orange. So, you know, we have to follow those and respect those boundaries.
Right.
So we are working with adults who get to make their own decision about whether or not they're willing to go to treatment. But we would have these treatment centers call and say that someone had called multiple times and had a real desire to get there but would miss the plane or miss the connecting plane. I mean, one time we went to the Atlanta airport to find a gentleman who had literally been in the Atlanta airport for 7 days, moving from bar to bar, missing every flight. Now, he was still calling the treatment center and calling and asking for help, yet he was physically, mentally, spiritually, however you want to encompass that, unable to get himself.
Unable to take that next step.
Right. And so we actually went into the airport, located him, accompanied him on the plane all the way to treatment. So we get calls from families all across the country that either have done an intervention, the family is calling requesting, the client himself is calling requesting, and there is that inability to make that final thing. So we have staff that will fly across the country, help people pack their bags, put the dog in the kennel, close up the apartment, pay their bills for 30 days, do everything that needs to be taken care of so that they can get to treatment. And we actually fly door to door. So we'll help them do that, get on the plane with them, and take them all the way to the door of the treatment center, and really is an important structural piece of getting someone to treatment, and we call that safe passage.
Yeah, and actually to add a little bit more, because I think as if somebody out there is kind of drawing a picture in their mind of what this is, it's a little bit more than what they may think, and I know because you've discussed it with me, and I've done the same thing again with minors, but there is a situation where you can get them onto the plane, and an example of getting them to sign on themselves. There's something about signing that paper to where they've signed on and said they're going to do it, and I know of a story that I've heard from you, but that there's somebody who says, you know, it's a good thing that I signed that thing, because if I didn't sign that thing, I'd be blowing out of here right now, you know, as when they got to changing planes, you know, I'd be taking off right now if I didn't sign that thing. So I think it's more than just somebody would envision of someone who just goes there and packs their bags and goes. There's a psychological component to get them to feel as though, first of all, that they're safe going with this person, but secondly, that there's a bit of authority that they may have signed off, maybe not realizing that they could just tear it up, but yet they still go.
Right. And I think, you know, just culturally, and we are getting more awareness and more education, so I do find that our families are veering further away from this. But there is a perception that because they're an adult and because they are seeking treatment, that they should just be willing to get on that plane and go. And if they really wanted treatment, if they really wanted to get better, if they really wanted to save their job, their marriage, their children, they would do this for themselves. And so families oftentimes will say, well, if he wants this, he'll get on that plane and he'll go. But the truth of the matter is, at that point in time, they're so impaired.
Right.
And they're so, just unable to make those right thinking choices. I think we've all heard the story of, it was very big in the news about 18 months ago, about the New York woman. The family did an intervention, successfully did an intervention, took her to the airport, put her on a plane. She actually had to change planes in Phoenix, got off the plane, went straight to the bar, lost track of time, went to catch her connecting flight to get to treatment, missed it, acted out. Of course, she'd been drinking, not good judgment. She was arrested there on the spot and actually seized while in custody and passed away. Now, you know, that may be the extreme of what happens, but the truth of the matter is, if you have a professional with you walking you through that, those stories don't have to happen. We don't have to go looking for people who have been in an airport 7 days, or young adults who got off the plane in Denver, Colorado and never made their connecting, and parents are now looking through hotels. And, you know, we don't have to do that anymore. There's professionals that will accompany them from point A and point B, and it doesn't have to be about whether they want it enough. It really is about setting them up for success and making this happen so that they can be in a place to accept treatment.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned about the impairment. What situation how do you handle a situation to where you are flying across now that you're changing planes, or even while on the plane, and that person, now they're an adult, insists on having that drink?
You know, that's a really probably the toughest piece of what we do, because it becomes a question of health as well. You know, obviously different drugs have different withdrawals and detoxification effects. Mm-hmm. I think most people don't realize, because alcohol is legal and so socially acceptable, that it is one of the most highest risks in detox, especially if someone is drinking a high level of alcohol on a daily basis. You don't want to put them on a plane from New York to Arizona or California for 5 hours and say, you absolutely can't drink. I think what we do, and it's an important piece of what Higher Power does, is we work as a team. So we're working with that treatment center, with the doctors at that treatment center, following what their recommendations are. Obviously, we're looking for nonstop flights.
Right.
Doesn't happen as much as we'd like, but that's our goal. Mm-hmm. But if we are switching planes, we're managing that, because allowing them to drink to stay well, but not be too drunk to get through security, to get through the 9/11. You know, if someone is severely intoxicated or passed out, the airlines won't allow them to fly. We've been thrown off of planes by airlines trying to get people to treatment and had to wait for a next flight because their level of impairment when we reach them. So we really work under a doctor's order, especially when it comes to alcohol or benzodiazepines, pills, things that medically could have complications from their home to the treatment center.
Sure. And it's actually one of the things that I've spoken about a little bit too, and it's, what's the higher purpose right now? You know, what's the bigger issue, you know, which is to get them there.
Right.
You know, and
safely, yes, and medically stable.
Right. Yeah. So to make that the highest priority, that you get them there safely, sometimes if it means that they have a drink, it's not the end of the world.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes health-wise, it's what needs to happen. But again, when you're working as a team and you're in active communication, as a professional working with other professionals, you're making judgments and decisions based on the client's, the individual's best interest,
right,
versus hard and fast black and white rules. You know, what does this person need to travel safely to the door of treatment? And it's an individual assessment every time.
Okay. And one of the things that, and I want to change the subject for a minute, one of the things that we were talking about, you told me a little bit about, you were talking about a minor telling you how they see the reasoning for not starting drinking.
Right.
Okay. You can share that, because I just thought it was just such a great story.
It is a really good story. A friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, by the name of Patrick Barrasso, who is a therapist who owns and operates a treatment center in Arizona called Inbalance Ranch, was speaking at a conference, and he actually brought up a study that spoke to predetermined versus predisposed addiction treatment.
Right.
And we all as families wonder, you know, if my dad's an alcoholic, if my grandpa's an alcoholic, am I destined to be an alcoholic? And there's a lot of different thoughts, schools of thoughts about predisposition, mm-hmm, versus predetermined.
Right.
I think no one is predetermined, but a lot of us may be predispositioned to lead that life. And this outcome study showed that the longer someone waits to begin drinking, and if they actually wait to the age of 21 to begin drinking, it is a 60% less chance, regardless of hereditary, regardless of family history, 60% less chance of becoming an alcoholic or addict, mm-hmm, you know, in your life. That's a pretty huge number. So I had shared that with this young man and spoke to him about the addiction in his family and about the roads that were out there for him, and had given him this study that, mm-hmm, you know, and is that based on that his brain would mature more, that he would learn more coping skills, that he would learn to deal with stressful situations better at the age of 15 to 21? Is that the reason? Or is it just the chemical, you know, of alcohol entering the brain?
Right.
I don't know. But I had given him enough information to make that decision when he was actually in a conversation with his peers where they were, you know, rationalizing why they wanted to drink and, you know, really pushing him to join them. He was able to use that and say, listen, if I wait, you know, my uncle is in prison, my aunt is in recovery after many years, so many people in my family are affected by this, and if I wait, I have a 60% less chance of following that same path. It was a powerful statement for
Absolutely.
Him and allowed him to get out of that peer pressure and was received mm-hmm. by his peers. So he was sharing it with me, and it was amazing how much they listen and retain when you think you're talking to the wall with teenagers.
No, and I really like that one. One of the things I like, besides the fact of just the listening part, but it is to empower them with something that they can give and feel good about it. In other words, that's a good self-esteem builder from the standpoint of I'm smart enough to know how this is going to affect my body and my brain, as opposed to the way in which some will do it, well, I can't because my parents will be mad at me, or, you know, I'll get in trouble, you know, or whatever. That's not the reason that they should not be doing this.
It's also not a reason peers accept.
Exactly.
You know, because every peer has that. Mm-hmm. So they can talk around that. You and I both work with adolescents and have mm-hmm. talked to them. They can talk that in circles. Any adult that's listening, any parent will go, well,
absolutely.
My child could be an attorney. He could, you know, he or she could rationalize that. But this really gives them some concrete evidence base to support why they're making the decision, and also allows them to look further based. I mean, most adolescents, I remember being an adolescent, I was bulletproof and invisible. I mean, no decision I made, it wasn't going to be me that mm-hmm. that happened to. That was the story of someone else. So I think this really gives them something, you know, to put into today, that if I just do this for today, you know, it's not forever, but it's for today.
Well, like I said, I think it's great. I think it's any time that we can give that type of advice and feel so good about the fact that they took it.
Yeah, you don't feel like Charlie Brown's teacher. Wah, wah,
yeah.
Wah, wah,
right.
Wah, wah, wah.
Exactly. Well, as I was saying, walk us through a little bit now in regards to a typical case. Because, again, I don't know that everybody has a clear picture. So if you can walk us through.
I wouldn't even know what a typical case looks like. I think people who seek out higher power come to us because they're looking for direction. They're looking for support and mentorship. So higher power, again, was formed out of that need for what we call personal recovery assistance. Our staff that go home help them transition that discharge plan into a living, breathing daily document. But it really has grown into a service of filling the gaps. You know, just with my own personal history of working in addiction and mental health, adolescent residential programs over more than 20 years. I'm going to age myself publicly. This is embarrassing. I've had the benefit of really being on the campus of over 500 different treatment centers across the country and internationally. So often families will call me just as a resource. What do I know about this, or who does that? So a lot of what Higher Power does is, if we don't provide a service or we don't know what that answer is, our relationships across this industry and across the country have allowed us to connect families to someone who may have the right fit for them or the right answer. So Higher Power, you know, our focus, our heart of what we do is the personal recovery assistance service that encompasses the safe passage.
Right.
Getting people to treatment, it's a big piece of what we
right.
do, and probably the most important, because if they don't get there
exactly.
and they don't start the journey, the rest really doesn't matter. But that transition home, that transition home is such a key proponent to finishing. It's like rounding third mm-hmm. and stopping,
yeah.
you know, when you have, you know, a franchise investment in the whole team. They've really got to have that extra piece. So we created services and brought in services that filled those gaps. So today, Higher Power provides the personal recovery assistance service, again, that encompasses the safe passage piece. We do a number of interventions. Actually, it's a systemic model. We work with the entire family system. It's not just the identified person who has the trouble. We really treat it as a family disease and a family solution. So we provide interventions to families across the country. And then we have a long-term monitoring program that we mentioned earlier that really is, again, that next lower level of care, that next step that builds personal accountability around, now they've finished their treatment program, they've gotten into working a daily plan of recovery, they've practiced it, they do it, mm-hmm. and now what's the next step? Again, if there's not a transition piece, there's another gap. So the monitoring program is that next lower level of care that breeds accountability.
Right.
You know, accountability breeds responsibility. And that can continue on, as we said earlier, it's a 12-month program that really can extend out to 5 years. Monitoring was created for the physicians, nurses, attorneys, pilots, licensed personnel who employers needed to see evidence-based, documented sobriety, abstinence, for them to maintain their licensure. So monitoring was put in place for that focus of people, but now is applicable to 14-year-olds who go home from treatment,
right.
to 82-year-olds. And you don't have to be a licensed professional to get that service.
Right. Now, and it sounds like this, it incorporates like drug testing?
Absolutely. It is a daily plan. The individual either logs on to the internet or calls in to an 800 number on their cell phone. So I don't know anyone who doesn't either have a cell phone or a computer. So there's really not any reason why someone wouldn't be able to log in. They log in each morning between 5 and 11. They find out if they randomly test. With the advances in testing, we can even do an 80-hour alcohol test. So if alcohol is the primary, sometimes they're testing twice a week mm-hmm. to cover that span of time. They are randomly tested. They turn in a weekly recovery log talking about what are they doing for their recovery, whether it includes meetings, therapy appointments, appointments at their church, their chess club. What are they doing to create fellowship, and what is their individual plan of recovery? They turn in that log every week, and then they have a 10-minute phone call with a recovery care manager on the phone. Again, it's not therapy. It's a mm-hmm. lower level of care that is talking about accountability. What have you done this week?
Right.
What are your plans? Where did the hiccups come in? Where's the red flags? The important part of monitoring is it takes away the parents' need to police. I don't know. I'm mm-hmm. sure our listeners, as well as ourselves, being parents of
right.
young adults and adolescents, when they come in the door and you're looking at their eyes, do they look loaded?
Mm-hmm.
Do they smell loaded? And we're terrified and we're policing. A monitoring program takes away that need, that fear around policing. There is a program in place that I don't have to smell their breath. I don't have to get the flashlight and look in their eyes. I don't have to search their room, because there is a program and professionals that will encompass that. And it's a very affordable, you know, we talked a little bit about finances in this whole thing, and it's a very affordable program for a 12-month. And most families go out to 3 to 5 years.
Well, I think that's great. Now, you mentioned intervention. We got a listener question that came in on that subject, and it said, please ask your guest if they do interventions like they do on the television show. So I'm just reading it, trust me.
Well, I have a lot of friends that work on that show, and how do you answer that? It's a dramatized show that's created for television and for entertainment. I hope that the interventions we provide are educational and informative. They may or may not be entertaining, I guess, depending on the viewpoint. But we do work with the families. We do not often do a surprise model. It is an invitational model. It's a systemic, meaning family systems model, where we are encompassing that psychoeducational piece around the illness and a commitment from the entire family to do something different. What is their piece? How are they going to learn more? How are they going to receive education around this so that, again, the whole system begins to heal? So, yes, I'm actually speaking at a conference in Florida in November, and our panel is doing stories of intervention, so we're all going to be sharing our stories, and I could probably share some stories that would be relative to the TV show, but most of them, you know, are really about sitting down and giving the family solutions and information and education and moving to a healing space.
Now, and you said invitational. At the times in which you're sitting down with these families, is the addict there with you in all cases, or are you now starting out working with them before you can get the addict there? you know, in other words, how are you broaching that problem?
We are absolutely working. It could be, and I use the term family relative.
Right.
I mean, sometimes it's an employer. Sometimes
right.
it's a loose association. I mean, people's families are made up of a lot of different people
right.
these days. So someone, a concerned individual, will call us and start talking about their loved one or the person, their employee, someone that they care about that they want to intervene on around substance abuse and addiction. And so definitely we will go through that process with them, identify who would be beneficial to be part of the group. We put our what we call a team together, identifying individuals that really can support this process, that have good information and good rapport and be part of the process. So we do work a lot with them and do a lot of education around kind of scripting what that intervention is going to look like. But we do encourage the individual to invite the person to the actual process. So the majority of the work of an intervention happens before the actual meeting, before the actual process.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. I want to leave everybody with a little message. This is from a Danish philosopher. It says, life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards. We'll be right back.
Am I too long?
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
We're back, and we are talking. Wow, we have that extra little noise there. We're talking with Nanette Zumwalt of Hired Power, and we are talking about how they deal with a lot of different things, everything from safe passage to setting up interventions and to working with the families afterwards. My term is aftercare, but she has at various levels of transition that she calls it. One of the things we haven't talked about is your people. We've talked about the fact that they fly out to wherever they're needed. Where do you get your people, and what are the levels of professionalism or the levels of background that you look for to get somebody to be good at this service?
Alan, I think that's actually one of the most important questions you could ask us about Hired Power. There are a lot of services out there that do similar, if not, well, similar services, but I think really what differentiates us is the quality and professionalism of our staff, the code of ethics that mm-hmm. we follow. All of our staff come from a background of experience, whether it is personal recovery experience, mm-hmm. having a minimum of 5 years of recovery, okay. personal recovery. Most of our staff average recovery in the teens and 20s. Five
wow.
years can still be really early. Or whether they come to this from a professional educational piece of working in addiction and mental health recovery. So they come to us with that professional and personal experience, and then we do a number of things. Remember, we're putting people in people's lives and in people's homes. So random drug screens are important, personal, professional, criminal, sex offender background checks, knowing who it is you're sending into these homes, DMV reports. We do personality profiling, as well as our own education and training. We require our staff to do 30 continuing education hours a year. That's actually more than nursing.
Wow.
on the subject because education is a new field and we're learning and growing more about the brain, about the systems, about family components, about outcomes. And so it's important for us to learn and know that information. And you may ask why I do that. These are not, they're not in-home therapists. We're not in place of treatment. We are not in-home therapists. Our role is to guide, support, and mentor a client. We have to be able to know what we're seeing because we're the eyes and the ears of the clinical team. Mm-hmm. What differentiates Hired Power from many is our team approach. We require the family or the client to have an identified clinical professional, a therapist, a psychiatrist, an mm-hmm. addictions counselor, educational consultant, interventionist, to be working with them to create this treatment plan. And those goals and objectives can change, you know, people's lives and individuals change. So we want over that 30-day period or 6-month or 12-month period, we want that clinical team to really be in place. So it's not one person making a decision for someone in the home. It's really a team of individuals working with. So our staff are, I think, the best, obviously. I'm a little biased. But we've got a great team. We're gender specific. So, right. Which I can't tell you the hundreds of reasons why that's so important to have a woman working with a woman or a man working with a man. I'm sure our listeners are, you know, are all shaking their head in agreement to the importance right. of that. But that does differentiate us from that gender specific. So our staff are educated, they're trained, they come from personal and professional experience, and they bring all of that to the client on a daily basis.
Are there some particular traits? And one of the reasons why I ask is that there's some similarity to these people as to what we have with our transport agents.
Right.
So there's a lot of similarities, but is there some particular things, you know, so for us, you know, coming from a psychological background or a law enforcement background or a sports background, you know, for instance, if you have someone who is an addict that is a former professional sports figure, you know, are you going to try to match them up with someone who maybe came out of sports themselves so that they can relate to them better? Is that an option?
Yes. I think it's an important piece of what we do because if you have a business executive, you need to send someone with them that can enter that world. If you have a professional athlete or they need to be able to walk that world, we work sure. a lot in the music industry. You know, can mm-hmm. you hang in that world? So it is, you know, aside from gender specific, it is really important walks of life, personal experience, backgrounds, and we work very hard. We have professional biographies on all our clients or all of our staff, and we present that to the family and the client and really identify who is a good match. If you're going to have someone living with you for a period
oh, absolutely.
Of time, it has to be a good match. But as far as background goes, I mean, And I'm almost a broken record in this. People will call me all the time saying, I want to be a personal recovery assistant. I think this is great. You know, what mm-hmm. qualifies me? And we've talked about the paper qualifications, but what I really want to talk about that are the three biggest things that I talk to families and to people who want to do this work, it's about boundaries, ethics, and common sense. And if everybody had it, it would be common. And it's not. But professional boundaries, can, you know, you're living in a home with a family, with a client. Can you hold those boundaries to do what's in the best interest of the client and not get too emotionally involved or too engrossed in the situation? Can you hold your own personal boundaries working with a client? Ethics have to be so black and white. Again, mm-hmm. I think as just a nation, we see where those ethics cross all the time, and there is no room for gray in this role. The ethics have to be very black and white. And the common sense is, you know, what do? You have to be able to manage, you know, red flags and highly emotional situations and relapse situations. And, you know, where does the common sense come in? So there's a lot of things on paper. And there's a right. lot of personal experience and background that come into mentoring someone and supporting mm-hmm. them. But I think those three things are invaluable and very concrete in what's needed if you're wanting to do this job.
Well, and I think we should, and to add one to it, and especially with where we live, is confidentiality.
Absolutely.
And I think, and one of the reasons that I know that you address that, because you know, some of the ed consultants that I've spoken to or families that we've referred to you have said that, you know, the level of confidentiality is important. But share a little bit about that as well.
Well, I think, you know, anybody seeking treatment, Hollywood, you know, there's a lot of, out there about addiction right now. There's a lot of news about it. There's a lot of reality TV about it. It's becoming more open and more aware, but that doesn't mean that a client wants that out there. And the level of confidentiality, whether you're a business executive or an 18-year-old going to college or a 16-year-old returning to high school, that level of confidentiality for you and your family has got to be utmost important and seamless. It becomes the client's choice what they wish to share. It's not our choice. Our clients are, the service itself is highly confidential. So, you know, sometimes our staff, in working one-to-one with them, we've been introduced as personal assistants,
right,
cousins, nephews, fraternity brothers, you know, someone that they're interning, and we get introduced whatever the client feels comfortable introducing us as. But we wear
right,
a lot of hats out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, when you brought that up, the first thing I thought of was, and I was in a restaurant, and these people walked by, and one of the other people said, "Wait a minute, isn't that guy, that was spending some time with you, you know, at some point in time in the past?" And the family just lost the blood in their face that they didn't want to talk about the fact that we were the person who had transported their son.
Right.
And they went, "Oh, that's the, you remember the school counselor that was doing some tutoring for them? You remember when they," and I just followed along. I went, "Yeah." And they went, "So how's your tutoring business coming?" "You know, it's coming along just fine. Thank you for asking. But you guys have a nice dinner," you know, and I just excused myself and moved out. Because you're right, to some of them, they don't want to talk about that. They don't want to share it with additional family members or additional people outside the family.
Absolutely. Oftentimes people are in treatment for extended periods of time, and one of the ways our personal recovery assistants are used, families need to leave treatment for a funeral or a wedding or a court case. So they hire us to come in and accompany them during that period of time. Well, who wants to go to a wedding and say, "Yeah, this is my personal recovery assistant, Bob," you know? So we, again, it could be personal assistants, it could be nephew, we get identified where that comfort level is for the client, and that's such an important piece, because it's not anyone else's business what role it is we're playing with the family and individually. It really is their business.
Mm-hmm. Well, two things I want to make sure we do before we run out of time, and one is, I'm sure that we haven't answered everybody's questions. If anybody has additional questions and they need to get a hold of you, what is the best way to do that?
Well, there's several. You know, our 800 number has 24-hour live answering, so they can reach us at any time. And I want to tell you that addiction is not a 9-to-5 question and answer time. So please feel free to call our 800 number, which is 800-910-9299. Please look at our website. Again, it's Hired, H-I-R-E-D, like David, hiredpower.com.
Again, unless you're her husband.
Don't call me God. A lot of people will Google Hire Power and say they couldn't find us. So it is Hired Power, and you can email us through there. Mm-hmm. Reach us on the 800 number, or feel free to email me at nnanette, or like Nancy, Zumwalt, Zumwalt, at hiredpower.com. We're a great resource. Hopefully, if we can't provide a service, we can connect you with someone across the country who can really outreach to you and your family and get those questions answered for you.
Now, for those of you driving, trying to figure out how you're going to remember to spell Zumwalt, you can just go to our website at answers4thefamily.com. Any questions you have, if you send it to us, we will make sure that it gets to Nanette.
Thank you, absolutely.
Now, you mentioned that when you speak, you have some success stories. Okay, any opportunity I get on this show to share a success story, I want to get it. So if you can share with us a success story, one that's one of your favorites, please do.
Oh, I have so many. I love what I do, getting to work with families, getting to be a solution to families who are really struggling, individuals that are really struggling, is such a gift to me. Thinking of, we talked a little bit earlier about the gentleman who was in that Atlanta airport for 7 days, unable to get to treatment, yet unable to leave the airport, really just stuck in limbo. And we were able to successfully get into the airport, find him, get him on his plane, and get him to the door of treatment where his family could start healing. I think that's one of my favorite stories. And I don't relate myself to Dog the Bounty Hunter that story.
No, please don't. But part of the success story to me is also a where are they now?
Yeah.
Because that's part of it is that, you know, we do certain things that helps the family at that moment, at that time of crisis. But it's the where are they now? You know, so this person, when they've rebuilt their life, they've gotten back with their spouse, their kids are now respecting them, they've got their job back. I mean, those type of things.
Absolutely. And those are everyday stories. I think the fun stories are the young adult that we transported to treatment who had some very colorful things to say to us and the people on the plane on the way, yet now she works for us as a personal recovery assistant after having 5 years of recovery for herself.
Very nice.
A huge story. We provided an intervention with a family of another young adult, and the intervention itself included the SWAT team, which was a story all in of itself. She, unfortunately, at that time chose the streets rather than assistance, but today she is sober. She is still living in a sober living environment. It's been over a year. And she is in active communication with her family, something that she wasn't for many years, mm-hmm. and is moving forward in her life and just enrolled in her first junior college classes. So we stay with the families. We get Christmas cards, wedding mm-hmm. invitations. We do annual mailings to our families, touching base with them. So the best part, you know, that extra paycheck
right.
is all about those stories, hearing where people are today. And the monitoring service is really allowing us to stay connected
right.
to our families and clients over a much longer extended time. So we do get to see the results. We get to see the outcomes. And something I didn't say is the statistics around the monitoring program, based on the physicians the pilots are licensed, is 89% success rate.
Oh, that's incredible.
And a 98% success rate with one relapse. So those studies, you know, documented evidence-based studies, are showing greater and greater outcomes the longer people are connected to services. So we're really getting to reap the rewards of seeing the clients that we've taken everything from the intervention phase through the course of treatment, going home with them with a personal recovery assistant, and then providing the monitoring. So we're getting to see them now 12 months, 15, 18 months out, and really see how they're rebuilding their life and the success rates that are happening in more acceptable numbers.
And to put that into context, share a little bit about what the success rate for those that aren't going through something like this?
You know, I think you can find those all over the internet, and it's really outcome studies. If they're done by their own treatment center,
right.
you know, it really needs to be a third party. I think right now...
Well, the government studies.
The government studies show less than 18%.
That's what I've heard.
Success rate. And I think even then, how do you document that? I think those numbers just are unsubstantiated. So it really is important for us as professionals and families
right.
to look at what are the resources out there that are going to reach more acceptable outcomes. And there are more services being provided, longer lengths of time, that families can really access support and get to the goals that they're looking for.
Well, coming from someone who flies a lot, I'd be very happy to know that there's a 98% chance that my pilot is not relapsing, okay?
Me too, yeah.
So anyway, thank you so much for being here. I cannot believe that we are out of time, but...
Yes, I could go on forever.
Yeah.
So please feel free to email or call with your questions. I hope I could be of service to you, or at least put you in connection with someone that could be of service to you and your loved ones.
All right. Great. Everybody, have a great week. Goodbye now.
listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
There's something about the way you try to look. It's getting right to me, deeper than it really should. What are you?